Salvatore Schillaci, the man who was made by Italia 90, but also Schillaci made the tournament itself. Emmett, Dan, joining me, David, here. We're going to go way back. Italia 90. For him, this was his defining moment of his career.
In retrospect, I think he is one of the shining lights of Italia 90. You've obviously got Giazza, Schillaci, maybe Roger Miller, are kind of seen as like the three main positives. Because Italia 90, there was a lot of negativity. Like, it had one of the lowest goals per game ratios in any World Cup ever. There was a lot of negativity, a lot of bad games.
English hooligans as well in Sardinia. So there was a lot of Italian policing at the time. And we want calcio aficionados involved in this discussion. We know that you're out there, so join us in the comments.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm not asking what you remember that day of the final, if you're 3 years old.
I mean,
what do you think of Italia 90 when you look back?
I'm going to be a contrarian here. I think it's the greatest World Cup there's ever been because...
It's probably the greatest for stuff that happened off the pitch rather than on it.
I just think you had so much incredible talent.
All in the one place.
Yeah.
More than one place. Yeah. You had some absolutely stunning kits. Italia 90 is arguably the only World Cup that has been played in a country whose league was by far and away the best in the world.
Yeah,
I don't think that's
time,
I don't think that's ever happened before or since.
Qatar 2022?
And wait for sold in 2034 or whatever that is. See, this is what I mean. How are we going from Italia 90 to Saudi Arabia in 2034?
Okay, let's get back to Schillaci. Yeah. Let's get to the positives.
Yeah, no, the positives were...
Surely it's his eyes, the six goals.
Yeah, that the visual
that's
of
what
the
I mean.
Eyes, like the manic, like just euphoria. Yeah.
On a serious note, I think that was probably one of the last World Cups where the fact that we didn't know anything and everything about every single player, there was something exotic about it.
Yeah.
Seeing someone, even if you were, you know, following the game in Italy, Schillaci was... Okay, you will know who he was, but he wasn't like a superstar. He wasn't the player that everyone knows everything about.
Came from obscurity off
exactly.
the bench.
Exactly. And the World Cup should be about that. Should be about throwing up these narratives that you don't expect. And the narratives that last for 10 days, 2 weeks, a month at best.
Yeah, but, like the Michael Owens of 98, that kind of stuff.
Our narratives that you remember like 3 decades on.
Yeah. And, well, this is why we love Italia 90. But when I think of it, apart from Baggio's goal against Czechoslovakia, it is all Schillaci. And even the great Roberto Baggio has paid tribute to how good Schillaci was.
Yeah.
And we're talking about one of the best players in history. We know Schillaci wasn't one of the best players in history, but he probably had the most impact.
Yeah. For those 3 weeks, he was magic.
Yeah.
And he was a boy from Palermo. You're wearing the home Palermo kit from last season. Behind the guys here, we've got this season's kit. And Palermo has paid tribute to his first anniversary of his passing. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, died at age 59, and we've got a piece on destinationculture.com, Salvatore Schillaci, the pride of Sicily remembered. It's all over our socials as well. And he comes from obscure poverty, like social redemption. It's a story of that. It's a story of coming from a fourth division club with Messina, the other part of Sicily. He had to leave home, and then finally Juventus took hold of him when he was... It was just banging in the goals every season in Serie
I think, B. Sorry to interrupt. I think you didn't only had that. It's a story of social redemption. I think Schillaci was a player that everybody could identify with as a man, first and foremost.
He's a real human.
He was a real, you will know someone like Schillaci. You might have gone to school with someone like him, or you know your dad would know someone like him, or your neighbor might be like him. I think that's why he resonated so much.
So he's a hero. Not a superhero, he's just a hero. And that is why people connect with him. They connect with his story and why we always look back fondly on Italia 90. So him doing what he did in that, the six goals, he won the Golden Boot as well.
He did.
Yeah. He won player of the tournament as well.
Ahead of
Mateus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mateus ended up winning the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
Schillaci finished second. Obviously, if Italy won it, maybe
he would have won it.
And so we've got this situation where a guy that comes from nothing can somehow rise through Serie B, have one season in Serie A, dominate the world. They use him as an adjective in some parts of the world for the next 20 years after that. In Jamaica, for example, Sean Paul with his song Temperature starts it with the girls is Schillaci. Basically, if you're Schillaci, you're good at something in Jamaica. And he became part of the vernacular, not just in football, but also in other parts of life,
yeah,
in other cultures.
Well, you think about it. In a year, in the space of 12 months, he went from playing Serie B football with Messina, won a move to Juve, scored 15 goals to Juve, went to the World Cup, and then finished with the Golden Boot within the space of 12 months. Like, talk about a meteoric rise.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, this is, for like, viewers and listeners based in Britain, I think this would be the equivalent of Jamie Vardy rising through non-league as he's done, winning the league with Leicester, and then winning the World Cup with England.
Or getting them
or getting the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting a Golden Boot.
Yeah. That was the only, it's the only sort of parallel I can draw with Kolasinac, because he was, yeah, he came out of nowhere.
When you look at what his trajectory, he only played 5 seasons in Serie A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he went to the J League. We've been there, Tokyo Edition. So go and check out that. We talk about Nakamura and Nakata and the best Japanese players, but also Kolasinac and Masaru and those that went the other way and played in the J League. That's on our YouTube channel. But the way he rose from 4th Division, got Messina from 4th to 3rd to Serie B, they were really never going to go up to Serie A. Palermo had the chance to sign him, but they were too big at the time when he was coming through at age 17, 18. So he was playing for Amat Palermo in the city, and it was basically like him, it's like dad's turning up. No goals, just hammering in poles. There's the two goals, the two posts over there, guys. That's your training pitch. And it was a community venture. Next thing, it's evolved into, oh, this guy's scoring goals every week for these juniors over there. Palermo are interested, but they basically used to come in and lowball offer for players. And Messina comes in, 4th Division. Palermo was 2nd, but Messina ended up paying a lot more than what Palermo were willing to offer. And he goes there, history made, the rise starts. Yeah. And it culminates in this crazy situation where the whole world, back then it was a TV set where everyone used to tune in. People were captivated by this TV. And if there's one person on the TV that's captivating the World Cup, he's captivating the world. And that was Kolasinac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing about Kolasinac at Italia 90 is what a lot of people forget is that he didn't start the first two games or first game. Like, Baccini's preferred duo was Cannavale and Vialli, like two bombers in attack. Yeah. And it's only because Cannavale stunk the joint out in the first game that Kolasinac was given a chance in the second.
Yeah.
So he got 6 goals from what, 6 starts, 5 starts?
Like, I mean, when you look at that squad, of course, the Palamaldinis were there, Ciro Ferrara, Beppe Bergomi, Baresi, in the midfield, Giannini, Marocchi, Donadoni, up forward, they were counting on, Mancini never ended up getting a run, but Cannavale, Vialli, they were the go-to guys, as you said.
Yeah, Vialli just won the Scudetto with Sampdoria, so it was the peak of his powers. I think it's always struck me like Kolasinac's first goal against Austria, it almost looks like the ball smacks off him and just goes into the net. And there is the element of like, it's casual to the point where almost he seems surprised by that, you know. And he like, I think he said in an interview that they asked him about the celebration and he said, I always celebrate as a fan because I, you know, it will be like an almost like out-of-body experience of, you know, seeing himself scoring on such a stage. It was just like, it was shocked first and foremost before obviously he was elated at scoring, but like the shock was the big thing.
To snowball, let's put this into context. You come from the second division now. 9 months later, you get an international call-up because you're banging in goals for Juventus. That's in March of 1990 when he makes his debut. Next thing, he's at the World Cup, 3-4 months later, and then he's the biggest name in world football. In the space of 13 or 14 months, Kolasinac has gone from nothing to the household name, up there with Lothar Matthäus. Think of it. You're playing Serie B, next thing, you're nominated for the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. I don't think we'll ever see it again.
No.
And we
no.
never saw it before.
And you think he made his debut for the senior side in the March of 90. And then his next game is the game against Austria. He scores and then he goes in that run. Yeah. Like,
not only he scores within about 5 minutes of coming on.
Yeah. It's like you if it was a film, people would say that's too unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, it's the script. You could not write a better script.
Yeah. But I think with Kolasinac, there's also the move to Juventus also significant from a social standpoint because he was, you know, a quintessential Sicilian lad.
Yeah.
Moving to to note, effectively doing what like thousands, hundreds of thousands of people had done in the decades before, like leaving Sicily, leaving the poor south to move on to the industrial north in search of a better life. And now there are still big differences now between the south of Italy and the north, but in the late 80s, the differences were...
political division. It was polarizing.
It's polarized, and there was, you know, there was... and it wasn't just a gap. It was like the differences between them were huge, financially, socially,
infrastructurally.
Yeah. And you are talking at a time where the mafia in Sicily was probably at its peak,
because taking out judges on motorways.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be only 2 years. Yeah, 2 years later, you know, the main judges fighting against against mafia families would be assassinated in Palermo. And you had this sort of, football was an element in this big sort of cocktail, but there was a lot more to football than Scilacci moving north, because it was someone like, he became an ambassador almost for everyone down south, you know, someone who could go up there.
A hero. An example.
Yeah. A bit like Diego was for Neapolitans.
Yeah.
Scilacci was like that for Sicilians.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And when you look at it, just to add to Dan's point here, you're looking at a situation where people watch Hollywood movies. They think Sicily's just, you can't cross the street because you get shot. Scilacci then offers another perspective. You can see that, yeah, sure, even though he came from poverty, you wouldn't have known that back then. They wouldn't have told you on TV this guy came from nothing. But it was pretty severe poverty.
Yeah.
You know, we've been to Palermo recently and still there's a rebuild going on. Italy's perpetually in rebuild, let's be honest. It's, you know, from the Romans until now, stuff's falling apart.
It's under construction.
It's
perpetually under construction.
And Palermo back then in the south, biggest city in Sicily for sure, but he is that sort of blueprint of what people want to be, an enigma in some way that has, again, come from not much to the world's biggest name in just 13 months.
Yeah. And to be fair to Scilacci, in interviews and, you know, every time he spoke about his upbringing in Palermo, he never tried to sugarcoat the fact that he came from very little, but he also never turned into a sort of, he never made it even worse than he was. It was very even.
It wasn't about victimhood.
Yeah, exactly. It was very even killed, you know. He just said, I never felt like I was missing something. It's just, this is what I knew. I know I was brought up like this.
Pull up by your bootstraps, move on. Because,
no, exactly.
You know, we could go into, you know, the social impacts of every single culture on the planet, but people just assume that, oh, he's from Italy, therefore everyone has everything in Italy. Not Milan and maybe parts of Rome did back then, and Genoa's and Torino's, but the north it's still, like you said, has that difference.
Yeah.
It's closing. Only because the North is aging and they're failing to rebuild, but still.
But in the 80s, there was a massive, there's monumental
gap. The political impacts, people wanting to separate. They wanted a border below Rome. They basically didn't want Naples and whatever was south of that to be part of Italy. It would have been great for the World Cup, to be honest, because we would have had some epic players coming through in the later World Cups. But let's talk about his World Cup. There were goals against Austria, Czechoslovakia, Uruguay, Republic of Ireland, Argentina, and England.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, of his goals, three of his goals to the World Cup were all winners. They were all...
Yeah, it was Uruguay...
Austria, Uruguay, Ireland. And England.
Yeah.
And funny you say that because...
Ireland as well. Yeah, so four of them.
He's only ever scored seven goals for Italy, six in that World Cup to win the Golden Boot. It's almost perfect that he didn't win that Ballon d'Or and finish second, because that gives him that human element. He did rise to greatness, but didn't quite get there. What a story it would have been if he did manage to score the winning goal. It's almost like the movie Goal itself, that some guy in Mexico crosses the border. Next thing, he's playing Premier League and Real Madrid and the rest of it. But that is the kind of story that we love to see. And let's talk briefly about his career after Juventus, went to Inter.
Yeah.
Didn't have the best time of it there.
No, I don't think anyone did those days at Inter Milan after the three Germans left.
Except Ruben Sosa was the only one that actually did well.
Well, they signed Scilacci. They signed Darko Panchev, who's been amazing for Red Star.
Yeah.
But he never lived up to his
potential. And they had Bergkamp as well at the same
time. Bidone, they call it in Italy, where they just
donkey.
12 goals there, though, for Inter. He didn't play that many games. He only played 36 all up because he was suffering.
That was Who was in charge? Was it Bersolini in charge of Inter Milan at the time?
Boscov?
in charge of Inter.
Yeah.
Boskov. At the time. I will just click on that season to find out.
I'm not sure it's Boskov, no?
It was Bagnoli.
Bagnoli, I'm thinking of.
Marini comes in to take over because that Bagnoli. Was Inter's. Yeah. They finished 13th in the second year that Scarchi was there. Sosa was top scorer. Bergkamp was there as well.
They nearly get relegated that season. If you look at where Inter finished,
they
and then won the UEFA Cup. So, for 2 points
I guess that was the start of the decline for him. From there, though, Schillaci moves on to play for Jubilo Iwata in Japan. And he goes from not really getting much game time or too many goals to then scoring 65 goals in 93 games. And again, go and watch the Japan feature that we've got on our YouTube channel because we've got a bit of Schillaci footage in there, a bit of magic. Just smashing him in. And I guess the J-League at the time obviously is one of those developmental leagues that they bring in these marquee players. And we still have leagues like that. The A-League in Australia that and has always pretty much
been. Yeah, I was going to say, they've been at the developmental stage for the past 30 years.
J-League's a bit of a higher standard. Jubilo Iwata back then. And look, he did win silverware. He won the Coppa Italia at Juventus, the UEFA Cup, and also the UEFA Cup at Inter.
Yeah, he
technically,
did.
So, he wins the J-League at Jubilo Iwata, finishes third place with Italy, Serie B top scorer. You haven't watched any Serie B lately, get our app right now, DCTV. But back then, Serie B was littered with like up-and-coming names. Kaziragi was playing.
It was.
Yeah.
And we're talking about like Golden Boot, Golden Ball, FIFA World Cup All-Star Team, Ballon d'Or second place, and should also mention with Messina, he won the fourth division Chidue back then and the third division Chiuno. So he never won the Serie A, never actually won the Serie B, but still Coppa Italia, two UEFA Cups, not too bad.
Yeah. I think there's that 2 year spell where his last season at Messina and his first season at Juve, that's kind of when Schillaci was at his peak, and then that led on to Italia 90. And then the Magic Knights ended and Schillaci was never really
I think that if you were to draw up a list of maybe the 50 best player Italy's ever had, it probably will not feature in the top 50.
Yeah,
but if you were to draw up a list of the 50 most iconic players that Italy's ever produced, it'd be in the top 5.
And that's why it's such a big deal to remember him when he's passed, because he died so young. And we should also mention, he went full circle. He came from poverty. And then when he retired, he went back to Palermo, even though he never played for Palermo. He still went to the games at the Renzo Barbera, but he set up a school, a football school for kids that were underprivileged. And that is the beauty of someone like that comes, is such a human element there. And you really feel that connection to footballers that do that. There's so many of them out there that do it as well. And there's so many stories that we'll never know because the money involved that players get paid these days, and they're always donating money. So well done to them, generous players out there. Exorbitant amounts of money, we should say, but what a legacy he's left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he's left it in his hometown, and then in terms of a world perspective, there's pets named after him, horses. I remember there was a horse called Schillaci when I was growing up in Australia, would win, you know, all the big races. He became part of the vernacular in places like Jamaica. I mean, everyone knows him. There are so many people that probably would know, if you asked them to name 10 Italian footballers these days, they'd have no idea, but they would say, okay, Baggio, Schillaci, Totti. You know, Schillaci would always be there, Maldini, Buffon. And he's one of those guys.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think the best way we can describe Schillaci is that, as Dan said, he's not in the list of the greatest Italian players ever, but in terms of iconic moments or giving happiness to Italian people, he's definitely up there. If you think of Alessandro Del Piero, who played over 90 times for Italy, Schillaci arguably did more in 7 games than Del Piero did in his whole Italy career. And for that, I think that is Scalacci's legacy, the happiness that he gave people in those 3 weeks in the summer of 1990.
I was going to say that's harsh coming from a Juventino, but Schillaci was also a Juventino, so fair enough. And we get away with that one.
You have to call a spade a spade.
And Dan?
No, I agree. I think he's just an iconic player. And probably the last, not just him, but like his generation was the last generation of players who were human beings first and foremost. Now, we all love football. we have nothing in common with footballers these days. They live a completely different life from the rest of us. And
they're sheltered. They're very sheltered. Yeah, they hardly make a public appearance unless it's a PR stunt.
Yeah.
And
society's changing now, mostly, and I don't think we'll ever see the likes of him again.
Yeah. Like, Scalacci was rougher on the edges, and that's why people loved him. Yeah. Because he was human. Like,
that was
else.
Another thing. Like, you know, he was sort of around the edges that he endeared himself to the public.
Yeah.
These days, he'd probably be mercilessly mocked for his lack of... He wasn't media trained in any way, shape or form. He could barely speak Italian properly.
Yeah.
And it would be subject to, like, memes and...
I think you see shades of Cassano in Scalacci, as Dan was saying.
Yeah.
Cassano obviously comes from Bari Vecchia, doesn't really speak Italian properly. Kind of, you know, he's rougher on the edges. Scalacci would get... And Cassano's mocked. Yeah. For a lot of the things he says, Scalacci would be the same if he was around today.
And Cassano was around before the social media era, so I think that both of them would be torn to shreds in this day and age.
It kind of ties into why Brazilian players are so good. They've got so many because they come from that street football kind of scenario, and that's where Scalacci came from. Maybe that's true. There's something in that from guys like Cassano actually talking about, and Del Piero talking about back in when they were children, the players that would learn to take on two or three on the streets, on the cobbled streets, and learn to bleed, you know, you get scabs on their knees. They're the ones that learned the hard way, and then they were
the ones that make
creativity.
It.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And look, the legacy's there. Let us know what you think of Salvatore Scalacci's legacy in the comments.